welcome. Last day of the conference. Hope you've been enjoying it. My name's Daniel Maher. I'm a principal consultant with a company called Infront Consulting. Just a little bit about myself. I'm a passionate All Blacks supporter. Obviously, we won the World Cup, so I'm quite happy being a Kiwi and Aussie. You guys can have the cricket, you guys can have the netball. I was actually born and raised in New Zealand. Auckland, I call hometown. Really, the brain drain that happens in New Zealand, I moved here. So that's the fountain of wealth. You probably recognize this photo more. Sorry. You probably recognize that photo a bit more. So the ship with the three towers. So I spent 15 years in Singapore. I'm a Microsoft MVP for System Center, Cloud and Data Center Management. I'm also a Citrix MVP as well for desktop. Viridian and Carmine Tester. These are code names for Microsoft products. You might learn something new here today if you don't know. Viridian is actually Hyper-V, Carmine is VMM. So I've been working with those technologies since the early days. And now I've been really working on the Azure stacks, things around Store Simple, IIS, Site Recovery, and Azure Remote App. So I got sick of Singapore and just last year moved to Melbourne, the world's most livable city. Yeah. Who's from Melbourne here? Oh, quite a few of you. Yeah. All right, well, reason why I moved to Melbourne was these three little gentlemen. So, yeah, let them have a childhood. They're not going to get that in Singapore. So let's jump straight in. So what are we going to learn today? What are we going to look at today? I'm going to go through three areas. One is around deployment architectures. So who's here heard of Azure Active Directory Domain Services? It's currently in preview. Anyone testing it? Okay, good. So we actually ran through a scenario where we actually built that with Azure Remote App. Then we'll talk about some of the best practices that I've been using in my environments to deploy GPOs and printing and profiles as well. And then we'll end with a little discussion about what it means for Citrix XenApp. Right. I've been working with XenApp since the XP days, and terminal servers is just as long. So, okay. So a little jumping into some of the deployment architectures, we look at really from an on-premises infrastructure, the session-based computing. These are our terminal services, RDS. VDI as well, and moving into RDS on IIS. So in Singapore, we were at a stage with one customer where they wanted to put their Dynamics client on RDS, but they couldn't put it on Azure Remote App because it was preview at that stage, and they weren't sure of, you know, the killing. So we put a big RDS farm up on Azure, spun up these D14 VMs, supported up to 500 users. They're now at a stage where they're actually looking at now moving that whole infrastructure into Azure Remote App. But you're going from a D14 machine to an A3 machine. Who attended Eric Orman's sessions? So the fundamentals? Okay, a few of you. The advanced one yesterday? Okay. So a lot of this is building on his sessions. So I'd encourage you to go back to his sessions and review the content there. So he talked about this, the non-domain join, the domain join. Really, we're going to focus on this one, the hybrid. So we're joining a domain, whether that domain is on-premises or whether it's a domain controller sitting in Azure or even AADDS. So that's what we'll be looking at there. So for that, you need a VNets. So you set up your VNets and so on. So we'll run through that entire process. So this is an architecture of what it would look like if you were looking to use the new preview feature AADDS, so Azure Active Directory Domain Services. So here we have our session hosts that are domain joined to this. It's really domain services as a service. Domain. So we're joining our Azure AD domain services, having GPOs applied to that. We can set up things like file servers that are also domain joined to that ADDDS, and store files here, home folders, roaming profiles if you don't want to use the UPD disk, and our authentication is all coming from Azure Active Directory. Right. So this could be seen as an all-in-the-cloud scenario. So let's have a look at what that looks like. So I'll switch over to my demo machine here. And I have an Azure subscription. So in this Azure subscription, I'm going to configure my environment for AADS. So the first thing you need to do is, so I have a directory called IgniteAU. You need to set up your users, join your users to that. I created a service account here called Domain Join, and I've added that into this group. So this group needs to be created as part of those that are familiar with setting up the AADS. You'll need this group created. And this group gives you, it's not admin rights over the AADS domain, but it's rights to admin the domain. So I've put my account in the domain join account in there. So the next step is then to basically configure the preview feature. And that's done from the configure tab here. I've already done this because what it does is you click on yes here, you put in your DNS, you select a subnet, a virtual network to connect that domain controller to, and that's your domain controller now. That's what Microsoft creates for you. In the preview, they say they'll create two, but I see I only have one, so not sure what's happening with the preview, but I only need one. So what do you do with this IP address next? So 70.0.0.4, that's your domain controller in the cloud. That's your DNS server as well. So if you look at my VNet configuration for that particular virtual network, you'll see that, once it comes up, my DNS is set to that IP. And then I've also provisioned additional subnets here. So you can configure additional subnets here. And I've configured an RDS subnet where I'll be storing my Azure Remote App machines. So once you've done that, you can actually now go ahead and provision virtual machines into those subnets. So actually I have a PowerShell script here that will actually set up a management VM, because you need to put a VM inside that environment now so you can actually manage your AD. Right? There's no console inside the Azure portal to manage your AD. So what you do, you spin up a VM, just run this. This will go away and create a management server, so MG02. So we're not going to wait for this to finish. We'll go to an environment where the management server is already set up. So jump here. This is my management server now. So assuming I've set up my management server, I've installed the AD consoles, I've installed the GPO consoles, I can now manage my domain. So this is the structure that you get with AADS. You get three OUs, AADC computers, AADC users, and these are where your computer accounts and user accounts sit. So in this case, I've actually already pre-provisioned, so that's a management server sits in this. These are actually VMs that relate to Azure Remote App. So it's spun up those VMs inside this OU. So I'll show you actually how you actually set that up now. And then you have your user accounts as well. So I'm logged in here as domain join, or Daniel, that admin account. You'll notice that there's not many tasks I can do here. I can't create new OUs. It's really a delegated administration approach here. You don't have domain admins to this domain. Okay. So if we jump back to our console now, so I've done the setup, I've confirmed that I can join a machine to the domain. The next part is really to then create my Azure Remote App. So go into App Services here. You'll see a Remote App option here. We want to create it with a VNet. So give it a name. So IgniteAADS. The different plans that we have, I'll talk about these later. We'll just give it standard for now. So standard will give 10 users per A3 instance. I select the virtual network that I enabled the domain services on, so the hybrid. Now I mentioned I'll put it in the RDS subnet, so you can have it in whatever subnet that you want. select that, and it is join the local domain. It is domain joined collection. Okay. So that will successfully create, and we can come into our two arrows here, and you can see we now need to put some input. So we click on that. There's four things that we need to do. We need to join it to the local domain. So this is the domain, the local domain that we created, the AADS. So the parameters here of, I'll just copy these into. So the OU container, you can see it's pointing to that OU because we can't create new OUs within that domain. So we actually have to use the existing ones. So AADDC. Paste that in, and then an account that has the rights to join the domain. Click on OK there. Okay, so we get a tick here. Just keep following in. So the next part is to link an image. So this is all the pre-preparation you have to do beforehand. So you can select images that Microsoft have provided you. You can create your own images as well. So I've actually already pre-created a couple images. So I'll link it to an existing template image that I have. And you need to upload it to the data center. There's your data center where you'll be spinning up all this infrastructure. So the image I'll select is an Office 365. It comes with Office 365 in it. And is set up for shared computer activation. So once I link that, it will then go away and start provisioning virtual machines in that OU. How many VMs it provisions depends on the collection and so on. You can see it's starting to provision now. That will take upwards of about an hour or that to provision. So I'm not going to wait for that to finish. And you'll see that I've already provisioned one that uses AADS. So once you've actually provisioned it, once it's provisioned, those VMs are there, you go ahead and publish your apps and then configure access. So I've published some of these apps already. So Windows Explorer, Chrome, Eudora, it's legacy apps. And provided user access here. So entering users from the domain. So just to check, Curtis is logged in. Move on. I'll show you how you launch apps, but we'll be doing that in another demo. So that's really the basics of setting up your environment. So with this environment, there's actually two VMs that were spun up by Azure Remote App for hosting those sessions. So whenever a user goes and launches the applications I've published, these applications I've published, they'll be seen. So I've actually launched them already. You can see Curtis is actually logged on launching them. Okay, so let's switch back to the slides. So that's really an environment you can actually spin up without any on-premise infrastructure. So this is everything in the cloud. That's just one of the architectures you can deploy. Okay. So I said I'd talk about some of the custom templates. So the images that I selected there, the Office 365 image, I'd actually pre-created that. And some of the tips that you want to do, and this is what Eric covered in his session, was how to create that image. So there, in the gallery, you'll find two images. These are the two images you want to use as a starting point for creating your templates. So you provision a virtual machine either using this one. This is just a blank RDS session host, no apps in there. This one includes Office 365. So during Eric's session, you would have heard that the only way to run Office in is your remote app is using Office 365 with shared computer activation. You can't bring your own Office. You can't run Office 2010. You can't run Office 2003. So you use that to create a VM. You install your apps into that virtual machine. You do your testing. You create multiple local user accounts on that VM, log on with them, test multiple users accessing the same app, so on. So that's your testing part. Once you're finished with your testing, you run a PowerShell script. And this PowerShell script is found on the desktop of that virtual machine. Once you run that PowerShell script, it will sysprep the machine, and it will shut it down. So once that VM is shut down, you can convert it to an image. So you capture the image, and then it exists as a VHD in Azure. And then the last step is to import that image into the template library for your Azure Remote App Collection. So once you've done those steps, you can actually then provision as many collections off those templates as you possibly can. Some of the other tips here, I won't go through them all. You can download this after the deck, after the presentation and check on that. Also have some links where you can go to check on that as well. Okay, so let's move on now and talk about some best practices. So these are kind of practices that I've been following for a good 10-odd years. Whenever I've done Citrix deployments, terminal server deployments, I've kind of followed these guidelines around doing deployments around GPOs, naming conventions, and so on. So before we get into that, though, we just want to highlight the cycle of management you have with Azure Remote App. And Eric goes into a lot more detail on this cycle. Than what I'll cover today. So go back to his fundamental session, go back to his advanced session. But basically, these are the five areas that you want to focus on when you start doing Azure Remote App. Okay. What I'll be covering is how we manage and lock down an environment where we do a hybrid deployment of Azure Remote App. So here, we actually have our on-premises AD. We use an AD connector, sync that to Azure AD. And we have domain-joined remote desktop session hosts, accessing files, accessing printers on an on-premise network. So this is what we're going to focus on today. Azure Remote App also has the cloud-only option, or what they call the non-domain-joined, but that's really a work group implementation for organizations wanting to integrate with their existing infrastructure. You're probably going to be using this model. Okay, so some administration best practices. Around GPOs, who uses GPOs in their Citrix? I'd expect most of you to be, hopefully. So how I typically deploy GPOs in a Citrix terminal server environment, I typically deploy two GPOs, one focused solely on user configurations and another solely focused on computer configurations. And why I do that is to target. I want to target specific user groups. I want to target specific computers or terminal services. So we use what we call these GPO filtering groups. So we have a filtering group here that applies the GPO to our RDS session host service, right, and put our server into a group. Group goes into another group. It's that AD best practice. Your user goes into a group, global group typically. Global group goes into a domain local group. Local domain local group gets assigned to the resource. Our resource here is our GPO. If we look at the top here with our user GPOs, now our user GPOs are there to lock down the machine, lock down the terminal server. There's certain settings we want to lock down. So we want to lock them down for our users. So putting users into an apply, so they get applied the GPO, means they'll get their lockdown policy. But admins don't want to be locked down on the server because they need to administrate the server. So we put them in a deny group and give them deny rights on that GPO. So it's simple like that. Some of the GPO settings we might enable, hide the server drives, don't get them confused on what is C drive. Is it their C drive on their client or is C drive on the server? Loopback processing mode. Who uses this in their GPOs? Good, good, good. And disabling command prompt registry and so on. The GPOs I'm actually using here, I've put them on OneDrive so you can grab them later. And some other considerations for locking down our environment. What we'll do is we'll jump into a demo and see what all of this looks like. Okay, I can close this now. Okay, so I'm logged in here as a user. This user's called Ethan. He's got a number of Azure remote applications already published to him. Just gonna launch Windows Explorer here. So Windows Explorer here, this is Windows Explorer running on the Azure remote app. So you can see actually the C drive, the D drive, and the E drive here. So D drive, you know, if you spin up a VM in Azure, you know you get a temporary drive. This is the C drive of the server. Right. Should the user get access to this? Type in command. They get a command prompt. Type in PowerShell. We get PowerShell. Would you want to give all of this to your user? RegEdit, for instance, as well. Task manager. It's probably not something you want to give to your users. Right, so we use GPOs here to lock that down. So I'll jump into my domain environment now, and I'll show you a structure of what I... DC03. So I've provisioned my... Let's show this first. So these are the Azure remote VMs that have been created that support that deployment I've done, that collection. So it's already provisioned four of them, but actually only one of them is in use. So I've structured my environment so I have a top-level OU, and I'm going to apply the GPOs that I've created to lock this down at the top level here, ARA. So let's do that, and then we'll restart. So I have a server GPO and a user GPO. So I'm just going to link that there, and I'll... So this is the Azure remote app session host. Just verify, there's Ethan logged on. He's launching his apps. Just going to restart this and apply that group policy. So you can actually do GP update /force/sync, but I'm just going to quickly do a reboot here, restart. Thanks, Tal. So that's going to go away, and what you should see is all of these, all of my remote app sessions have gone, and it's restarting that server. So what is this GPO that I'm actually applying? So let's have a look. So the server GPO, I'm applying only one setting here. Loopback policy processing mode replace. I'm using replace mode for loopback processing. Those that are familiar with loopback processing, basically what this is saying, any user settings, any user logging into these servers is going to get settings that I define. And what have I defined? I've defined all my settings in that user GPO. So this GPO gets applied to our remote desktop session hosts. I'm going to have to kill my Twitter. Okay, so you can see the apply deny groups here, the GPO filtering. If I look at the user GPO, I've also got apply deny groups here as well. And if I look at these apply deny groups, so my GPO filtering groups here, so my user GPO apply group contains a users group, and inside users, these are my remote desktop users. I also have the deny group. So the deny group contains the admins and the admin members. So with these GPO filtering groups, if we drill down into looking at advanced, you can see the deny user GPO group gets denied the apply group policy. So the apply group policy, they don't get that. Okay. So hopefully my app has restarted now. Let's just double check. Still coming up. Check is up. Still restarting. Okay, so while we wait for that to restart, we'll look at the GPO from an AADDS point of view. So the same, actually, before we move into that, what are the settings that I'm actually applying as a user? What type of things am I locking down here? So this is the user GPO settings. You can see that I've disabled the computer configuration here. And likewise with the computer configuration, disabled the user configuration. So things like removing the task manager, hiding these drives, A, B, C, D, for instance. Disabling access to the command prompt as well. So these same settings can actually apply to... So I have another environment here with the AADDS Azure Active Directory Domain Services. You can apply the same settings to these GPOs as well. But you can't do things like filtering. You can do things like disabling the computer configuration, but you cannot change the security filtering. You can't put AD groups in here. That's one limitation of using AADDS. One other thing that I found was that if you're using loopback processing mode, you'll have to enable it for merge because the GPOs are applying at different levels. We don't have that control. Okay. So hopefully now my RDS has restarted. Just double check. Check that. Okay. So I'm launching my Windows Explorer again as that as Ethan, and we'll see whether the lockdown has actually applied now. That group policies, those group policy settings. So we hid the drives. We hid CD, A, B, C, D. E is still there. We need to remove E as well somehow. I have a solution to that later. Command, it's been locked. PowerShell shouldn't be there anymore. PowerShell's been restricted. And... Task Manager. Okay, that's also been locked. Now, that's as a user, as Ethan. So me as Daniel, who's an administrator, I should still have where's Daniel? Okay. So this is Daniel, me as an administrator. I have the same apps. I see exactly the same apps as every other user, right? But I should be able to launch authenticate the first time. I should be able to launch command prompt, right? I should have access because I'm in that deny group. I'm in the admin group, which set to deny permission, so I don't get that lockdown policy. So here's my, and I'll have access to Task Manager and so on. Right. So that's one way you can actually structure your GPOs. That's what I've been doing for the past 10 years in my environments, structuring the GPOs, doing these apply-deny groups, so that your admins don't get locked out of your RDS service. Okay. All right. Let's move on. So this is a common question I ask. So what is the most common complaint that your users, you as an administrator in your remote desktop environment? Only spend 30 seconds to talk to your neighbor about, you know, the top three problems you typically face in remote desktop environments, you know, if you're managing them, if you're administering them. So I got chocolate here as well somewhere. Anyone? Passwords? Password resets? Drag and drop? So your user calls you up on the help desk. What's the number one problem they typically talk about?
It's slow.
Okay. Well, typically these are the three that I kind of get. One around printing. Typically, they're having printing problems. They want to print something, it's not coming out the other end. Right. The user profile's screwed up. Somehow the roaming profiles doesn't work. They get the new settings from a default profile from another server, for instance, and so on. And connection, yeah, it's slow, yeah. So where is it slow? Some of the other problems I typically get are these. They might match some of the things you get in your list as well. Don't have access to all the needs. There's a whole number of different problems you could get in RDS environments, but what I'm going to focus on are these top three, really. So around printing. In your environments, do your users actually do printing? So should we ask the question, do you first of all need to print? Can you print to PDF and then just email the PDF file? Is that an option for your users? Or they actually need a hard copy of those documents. Next thing is you ask the question, where is your printer located? Right? If we're going to be starting to use this Azure remote app, we can only host it in one of the Azure data centers, so it's either Sydney or Melbourne. Your user might be in Perth, for instance, and the printer's in Perth. How do we get that print job from the Azure data center all the way to Perth, for instance? How is it attached? Is it USB attached? Is it network attached? These type of things. Where is the printer driver installed? Is it a 32-bit driver, 64-bit driver? Azure Remote App only supports Windows 2012 R2 OS, so it's pure 64. 32-bit printer drivers on a 64-bit OS don't really go well together. By default, Azure Remote App will map all your local printers as redirected, and it will try to use the Universal Remote Desktop EasyPrint. So there's cases where you might want to consider a third-party solution. And I'll actually go through a third-party solution, ThinPrint, which I've written into some of the architectures for some of the big deployments I've done. And it's really bring all the printing issues down to a minimal level. So we'll look into how Azure Remote App does redirected printers now. So we have a client PC here. And we have a number of printers attached. Right? So they could be printing over the network RAW, RAW 9100, or it could be USB attached. And we have these Microsoft Office XPS document writers as well. So what happens when you log on? All of these printers get mapped over the side. Right? They get redirected. They get redirected on this side. So if you've got 100 printers on that side, you're going to see 100 printers here. And it'll slowly map each one. As soon as you log on, you'll see it slowly map each one. Is that really necessary? They only need to print to one printer. So it's enabled by default. You can control access via a GPO, and you can control access by a PowerShell command as well on the collection. So in an optimal printing scenario, we want to have the ability to say only these two printers we want to map inside our session, because these are the only two printers we ever want to print to. Right? And this is now with a ThinPrint scenario, where ThinPrint is based on a client-server basis. So the server you install on your RDS session host, the client you install on your PC or your endpoint device, And what ThinPrint can do is it can do compression of the print job. We'll see a bit of that. And it also does bandwidth control. Why is bandwidth control important? So if you do a big print job in an RDP session today and the print job's going through your RDP tunnel, what potentially can happen? It can flood your pipe with print traffic. Remember, going this way is your screen, your clicks and keyboard presses. So it's going to affect their performance. So if we can control the bandwidth that printing takes, because it's a low priority traffic, right? It's not real time. We can actually then manage the user experience a lot better. So this is ThinPrint with an RDP tunnel. So still printing through your RDP tunnel. Another scenario is, let's see how we can get that print job completely out of bandwidth control. So the last scenario we talk about is how we can get the print job completely out of that RDP tunnel and print outside of RDP. So in this scenario, we still have our RDP printers. So these two are mapped into our session. But we have a third scenario where now we're at a branch office, say a branch office in Perth. And this branch office has a local print server. Right? So we're consolidating printers at our local print server. Because remember, when we print raw 9100, it's the big full print job. So that's great for WAN-based networks, but not great for printing across the WAN. So in this scenario, we spin up a ThinPrint server inside Azure, which is on the same subnets as our Azure session host. So we take this printer at our local Perth print server, and we create a copy of that inside the ThinPrint server inside Azure. So whenever we print from here, it's going to do bandwidth control across that link and print across TCP IP. So it's not going through your RDP stream anymore. So whenever a user prints to this printer, and here we actually share it out to our session host as well. So this printer is shared here. So we have port 445, right? So sharing port, SMB. So when a user selects this printer to print, the print job will be spooled here, sent across the wire to here, and then to the printer. And all through that process, we're actually doing bandwidth control and compression. So deploying print servers in Azure helps you optimize your print jobs, printing, removes unnecessary traffic from your RDP tunnel, and providing that better level of service for your users. So let's have a look at what that looks like in practice. Okay. So I'm just going to close that. Okay, so still with my user Ethan, let's launch Adobe Reader. And I'm going to print the agenda for the Ignite. So while that's loading, I'm going to open WordPad as well. So the environment I have here is I have an OfficeJet printer. It's USB attached. I've got it paused because it's not actually connected to my machine right now, but I want to see the print jobs come in. So we're going to do some printing. I'm going to print from Adobe a document, quite a large document, sitting on the documents. So while we're waiting for that to come up, if I select print here, now if you analyze this, you can see all the redirected printers from my local client being redirected into my terminal server session. So where you see redirected 3, this one here is actually a printer that exists on the session host itself. We can actually delete that. And I'm running Office 2016, so you actually see the OneNote 16 in there instead of OneNote. So the 2013 there comes from the session host. But do I really need all of these printers here? I only want to print to two printers. I want to print to my LaserJet and my OfficeJet. Right, so let's do a print from this document. So this is now Adobe launched in the remote app. Okay, so again, if I look here, these are all my redirected printers. I want to print to this OfficeJet here. So just close this. So print. So what I should see after a while is my print job being printed to across the RDP into my printer queue sitting on my local PC. So where have I actually spun up this Azure remote app today? Well, I actually spun everything up in Singapore because the AADDS is only preview in Singapore. You don't actually get AADDS in Australia right now. Australia Azure data centers. So the print jobs actually came from Singapore all the way down here across my RDP connection. So you can see it's taking a bit of time. We'll just let that complete. Now, I'm going to enable a thin print scenario now, and I'm going to enable it using a GPOs. So I've actually configured some GPOs that will enable the thin print scenario. So there you go. My job's come in. It's 830 megabytes in size. So not so bad. 8.3. So the owner is this Spark. This account is not Ethan. This account is actually the account on my local PC. I logged in with this BARKE account. So, okay, we've done our printing. Let's close this all. And we'll apply our GPOs and restart. So, and while it's restarting, so that's it. So we'll apply a different set of GPOs here. Delete. Okay, so let's restart again. You actually have a PowerShell command now that actually restarts your session host as well. You can actually check which user is logged on to a session host, and you can actually restart that using PowerShell as well. Okay, so going back, that's now restarting. You can see my sessions are lost. So let's have a look at what this GPO is actually doing. So we have this one. What I've done here is I've actually enabled the GPO to disable the do not allow client printer redirection. So I'm now disabling all my redirection because I want to control which printers I want to print to with ThinPrint. So I need to install a ThinPrint client somewhere, so I've installed a ThinPrint client on my PC. So this is running on my PC. I've selected the two printers I want to print to, this LaserJet printer and this OfficeJet printer. So on the ThinPrint client, on the ThinPrint server side, I've spun up a ThinPrint server inside Azure. And this is the ThinPrint server side. So this is now sitting in Singapore as a ThinPrint server inside Singapore Azure data center. And I've set up a port called HP1. HP1 is configured to print to printers with the name HP LaserJet and HP OfficeJet. So what I've also enabled here with this port, it's a printing port, these printers use this port, is bandwidth control. So I can control what bandwidth any traffic going across this port uses. So I'll put 2 meg here. But I can put it down or up as much as I require. And I'm printing through the virtual channel gateway, so that's going through the RDP protocol. I'll leave that open. Okay. So let's just check that my... check that this is back up again. Okay, while that's coming up, let me just show how those printers get mapped from my client to my server. So with ThinPrint, we have a group policy here, which basically says this. If the printer name is HP Office, map it to my print server and that printer object that uses that port, which is under the bandwidth control. So HP OfficeJet maps to HP OfficeJet. HP Laser, if the name's got HP Laser in it, will be mapped to HP LaserJet. So that's how we actually configure it. So applying that GPO will apply this matrix. So whichever user logging on will get a printer mapped as long as that printer name matches that. It must still be restarting. Okay. So in addition to that, while we're still waiting for that to restart, let's show the printing outside. Let me close this. Printing outside of your printing outside of the RDP stream. So in addition to port HP1, I have this TCP port Melbourne 1, which is actually using TCP protocol. So this port here is the second scenario. We're printing across ThinPrint outside of our RDP stream. And again, we can control the bandwidth to our port. And this is actually has a printer that's already configured, Fuji Xerox printer, on another local print server. Okay. So we'll print to that one as well and see what happens. Go back here. Okay, so let's launch our Adobe Reader again. And we'll launch our WordPad. Still coming up. Refresh. Okay, still taking a little while. Our remote desktop session host is actually up. It's just taking a little while. Because I've set this as a standard, it's only spun up one, because as you provision more users, then it starts spinning up more. This one RDS session host can support up to 10 users in this collection. Come back to this. Okay, I think it's working now.
Daniel, while we're waiting.
Yeah, any questions?
If we've got a custom app and which you put in the remote app, and let's say within that app it can export to Excel.
Mm-hmm.
So how does it work contextually? Does it pick up Excel that's installed on that?
So yeah, if you launch the app, Excel's also installed on that same session host. So if you export to Excel, it can actually launch Excel.
Okay,
it's seen as a helper app. So it typically works that way, just like PDF. So when you open PDF files from some enterprise apps, it can actually open Adobe Reader as long as it's associated with that. So let's print the same agenda to that printer and see what happens. Now, what this is doing is printing through the RDP, but through ThinPrint now. So I'll launch WordPad at the same time. So we just verify what printers we're getting now. So remember, with a ThinPrint client, I mapped two printers, an OfficeJet and LaserJet. So you just see those two printers there. So I don't see any redirected printers anymore. The GPO has applied. I get LaserJet and OfficeJet. Let's just have a look at the properties of this. So one thing with the thin print, we can actually control our compression level. So the admin can control the compression level from normal up to no images. And it uses the TP output gateway driver. So that's a universal driver that's installed on your remote app servers on the ThinPrint server. So that's still loading. Okay, I've got too many windows open here. Okay. There's our printer. Okay, so it's come up. So we're going to print the same document, but with ThinPrint now. And there's my OfficeJet. And clicking on print here, it's already spooled and it's already at my location. And you can see the size difference here immediately. It's 1.15 meg, same document. And it actually picks up that I'm Ethan that I'm trying to print from. If we go back to our print server here and look at the port, we actually have some statistics that actually tell us, what was the last print job that went through that port. And we're compressing at 90% that PDF file sending to our user. So that came from Singapore, compressed 90% down to where I am now. So that's with ThinPrint. Controlling all of this. Now, why is this important to us? If your users are doing a lot of printing and these jobs are not compressed, what's happening to your traffic? You're pushing a lot of traffic outside of Azure. You're charged for egress traffic coming out of Azure, remember. So if you can compress and optimize that traffic and as well bandwidth control that so it doesn't affect the RDP session, then that's where solutions like ThinPrint can help you. So this is just one of the many third-party print solutions out there. I typically work with this product because it really controls those printing issues. There's other ways you can configure this as well. Printing to a network-based printer as well through TCP. Okay. All right. So let's move on. Any questions on printing? Okay, let's move on. So let's talk a little bit about user profiles now. So Azure Remote App gives you by default a 50 gig, as a user, 50 gig UPD. So user profile disk. It's basically a disk that mounts your user profile. So you can see an example there. It contains your enteruser.dat as well. So what's stored there, documents, files, basically all the settings, all the files that you typically store in your user profiles. One way, not many users is gonna exceed 50 gig, but if they do, then you might want to consider using folder redirection, so using GPO policies to redirect certain folders like desktop and documents, for instance. These are the two key ones that I typically redirect for my users. There is now a way to disable UPD in Azure Remote App. You need to send a request to support, though. There's a link there you can refer to. Once they've disabled it, it's disabled at a subscription level. So all the collections that you provision under that subscription will have UPD disabled. So once you've disabled UPD, the alternative is actually to use things like roaming profiles, third-party profile solutions, things like AppSense to manage your profiles then. Now, if you want to move from your current environment that doesn't use UPD to an ARA solution that doesn't have UPD, you have that option today. Okay. Sorry, jumped too far. And lastly, I just want to highlight the four different plans you can create with Azure Remote App. So Basic and Standard have been around for a long time. They recently introduced Premium, Premium Plus. Eric covered some of this content. Thing is, the compute instance is A3 all across the board. What's happening is instead of your user density, so with A3, Basic, you're getting 16 users per the A3. With a premium plus 2 users per A3. So 2 users gets more RAM, gets and so on. And the charging is different. So minimum 5 for premium and premium plus. Whereas they'll charge you 20 if you minimum 20 if you get standard or basic. Okay, so we're going to close off now by talking a little bit about Citrix XenApp and how that compares with Azure Remote App. So going back to this slide, the session-based computing, really that compares with our XenApp. VDI's your Xen desktop comparison, direct comparison. RDS on IaaS, again XenApp, and the XenApp again here. What Citrix has really come up with is this new suite called the Cloud Workspace Suite. And this is really a combination of all their products connecting to any on-premise infrastructure, to any cloud, whether it's Azure, AWS, and so on. But for our comparison, we're just going to focus on the XenApp part. You know, the NetScaler, the Xen Mobile is something that's additional. So let's focus on some of the limitations we see with Azure Remote App today. So only one OS is supported, 2012 R2. 2016 will come along as that moves as well, but you won't be able to host anything on a 2008 R2 or 2012 as well. Single user to single collection, right? The way it's structured is you have one AD user and it can only be assigned to one collection at this stage. Think about the scenario where I'm spinning up my Azure Remote App collections in multiple data centers across the world. So I'm a multinational, I have infrastructure in US, I have infrastructure in Europe, and I have one identity, and I want to access apps in those collections. I can't do that today. I can only be in one collection, so be aware of that. Granular assignment of users to publish applications, this is coming, and this is what Citrix has been doing all along, and I'll show an example of that shortly. GPU support, so Microsoft's released a VM that you can have a GPU for now. It's on the roadmap as well. Monitoring tools, that's a bit difficult with that Azure Remote App today, knowing what users on what what session host and so on. There's some PowerShell commands you can actually run to check that now, but it's not a single pane of glass that you can actually refer to. Publishing the full desktop, that's important if you're using thin clients. Right? You want to publish the full desktop. You can't do that with Azure Remote App. And Linux support. So Linux support's coming in terms of the client side with the HTML5 browser, but Linux support from publishing Linux apps, something Citrix can do today. So Citrix, it's really in the protocol. The protocol's been around for a long time. When you spin up your Azure Remote App, it must be in an Azure data center. But your users might not be near that Azure data center. They're typically on a slow WAN link, slow internet link. So the ICO protocol has been around for a long time. They've improved that with HDX, and they even have this thing called FrameHawk now, which is performance over a very, very bad WAN connections. Right? So having a better protocol means you're going to get a better user experience. So depending where your users are, if they're all located in the big city centers, then potentially Azure Remote App is a great fit. But if they're sitting somewhere in the outback, you might want to reconsider that. Some other features that Citrix provide that Azure Remote App don't, the pre-launch and linger. So when a user logs onto Citrix, it forms a session to that Citrix server immediately without them even launching an app. So when they launch that app, it's near instantaneous, it comes up. So a better user experience there again. Flash optimization is better with Citrix. We have AppDNA for managing our app migrations. So it's a tool that they provide. And they actually monitor with Edge Site. So there's an Edge Site Director, which gives you a better pane of glass for monitoring. So a case for Azure Remote App, where would you look at using Azure Remote App? So integration with Office 365 is really, really good. So if you're using Office 365 today, then Azure Remote App really integrates with that well. The Pro 3, Pro 4 plans. Anything integrating with Azure, so greenfield environments, typically. There's some limitations on the users and collections as well. So for the basic collection, up to 800 users. So if we're talking about thousands of users, you'd have to create multiple collections, up to 50 collections per subscription. And then the last point there, really infrequent access. If you only have a user using an app for an hour a day a week, then you know, Azure Remote Apps, you know, geared for that in terms of pricing. So situations where Citrix makes sense now, a case for Citrix. So large, complex enterprise environments, you know, that's been around for a long time. Multi-site domains, forests, these are all important. Now having, with Azure Remote App, we had that one single user per collection, one identity. If, what happens when you've got multiple identities, you've got multiple domains involved as well. The connection brokering is a lot better. We can control how we load our servers, how users reconnect to their sessions, how they connect to their sessions. The NetScaler. NetScaler does add a lot of value to the Citrix solution. We can do global load balancing across data centers in different locations. And then multiple OS support. So the latest version of 7.6 XenApp supports a farm that can contain different OS versions. So if you needed to publish apps on different OS platforms to your users, then it's that's possible. And controlling our golden templates. So we can actually do that within Azure portal today, creating our golden images. But Citrix has a better way. And MCS will be made available in Azure shortly. So managing your golden images from Azure and MCS. So Azure AD, typically you're going to set up your AD Connect to your on-premise AD. But you're talking about having a pure Active Directory, pure Azure Active Directory? So typically, your identity today is controlled with your Active Directory on-premises. So having that through AD Connect up to your Azure AD, then you can use that same identity on-premises in your Citrix as well. So actually, I've set that up as this demo. All of these user accounts I'm using actually synced from my on-premises AD. So it's being used for Azure Remote App, but it can also be used for Citrix as well. So we talk about client support now. Citrix, we call it Citrix Receiver. The Azure Remote App client, you can't use third-party RDP implementations. It has to be a Microsoft one. So it's a click one. You would have seen that in Eric's demo. The support they have, Citrix has a lot more support. The Linux support is coming in terms of the HTML5 client. Chrome, same thing, and so on. But let's say the major platforms are supported, Windows, Mac, iOS, Android. Now, if we talk about an environment where you're using thin clients, so if you're using thin clients, typically you want the full desktop, maybe if it's a Linux client. You notice Linux is not on the thin client support list. Also, Windows Embedded XPE is not on this list as well. If you look at the majority of thin clients deployed today, they're typically on XPE or Linux-based. So you're kind of stuck if you want to use Azure Remote App with your thin clients. A lot of some of the new vendors might be launching Windows 7 with a Azure Remote App client, but today I haven't actually found any, correct me if I'm wrong, if you know of one, any thin client vendors out there that actually are supporting the Azure Remote App client on that. So that's one consideration if you're using thin clients. Okay. So lastly, I want to end with this deployment scenario of putting, based on what we talked about there, putting XenApp actually in Azure now. And there's actually the session was done with this previously, where this is actually an enterprise architecture for hosting Citrix XenApp in Azure. So we use things like the traffic manager for DNS. This, we have in one Azure data center, a fully redundant Citrix infrastructure, another same setup in another Azure data center. So this could be East, this could be Sydney, this could be Melbourne. We have NetScaler. So NetScaler is available on the gallery. You can set up a NetScaler VPX, bring your own license for that, set it up redundant, set up your storefront servers, so your web access, delivery controllers, SQL servers, and all your session hosts as well. So they could be segmented by different virtual networks, different storage accounts as well. I refer you to this calculator. This calculator will help you actually do some sizing and cost analysis of what it could do. But the possibility of now moving your Citrix environment from on-premises to Azure is possible today. And using the inbuilt components that we have with Citrix, with Azure. Let me just cover quickly Citrix ZenApp. So this ZenApp environment that I have is actually running up in Azure today. So one thing about user experience with Azure Remote App is I've logged in as a user here, Ethan again. I see all of these apps, right? Whether I use them or not, I get all these apps that have been published to me. There's no folders that kind of group these apps. So in a Citrix world, I have the ability, and I'll log on with Ethan here. So same user account. Now, Ethan can launch the desktop if he wanted to. He's assigned four apps to him. These are the four that I use quite commonly, potentially. But I can actually add more apps. So more apps. And you notice I've actually segmented my apps as well. So all my web browsers are grouped together. And I can push them down. So what Citrix gives you is the ability for a better user experience in terms of what apps they typically use. This is from a web page, but you can also use this from the Citrix receiver as well. So as an admin, remember, as an admin, now if I log out of Ethan and I log in as me as an admin, I might be able to... So with Ethan, he saw command prompt here, right? He can launch it, but he can't do anything with it. But me logging on as an admin now, I get the same, I can launch the desktop, but my apps are different. I get web browsers, but I don't get Office. So you can control your what apps gets published to which user with Citrix. But this is also coming in Azure Remote App, but not available today. The fact that you can actually segment into different folders is very helpful as well. Especially if you've got hundreds of apps that you want to publish. So if we look at the studio side, so the management interface for Citrix, we can also segment our apps here. If we look at our web browsers, so things like this utilities, the CPU I've only published to Azure Remote apps. So we can actually use groups now to control access to apps as well, which we can't do in Azure Remote App today. It's an individual user. Okay. And the last thing really is around the director. So your dashboard for monitoring. We don't have this capability today to drill down into different times, see who's logged on, have a look at log-on performance. So the monitoring aspect for an admin is important. So if you need to do troubleshooting, this is a basic tool provided by Citrix. There are more advanced tools. There's actually in the expo a company called Lakeside. They have something called SysTrack, which actually monitors Citrix as well as RDS environments in more detail. So if you've got thousands of users, I'd pay them a visit just to see what their product does. So from a Citrix point of view, really we're looking at better control over your environment as well as providing a better user experience for your users. Okay. So just about there. Okay. So I end on this slide. And really some migration scenarios and considerations when you're actually moving. So moving from on-premises RDP environments or Citrix environments to Azure Remote App. So really, if you've got a single server, and I've seen this in organizations before, it's really been set up just to host a few users, that migration to Azure Remote App should be quite simple. You can move your apps as long as they're supported on 2012 R2. Things we need to consider a few more consider a bit more is if you've got a server farm that's geographically dispersed, right? Which Azure data centers do I need to host my Azure Remote App in? Which is closest to my user? Where are my apps as well? I need to move my apps into Azure as well. Maybe that's something I need to consider. If I'm not using UPD, any of the third-party profile solutions, potentially, and so on. For Citrix, I split it up into two. Citrix changed their architecture recently. So those familiar with Citrix, the IMA architecture, in XenApp 4.5 to, well, before that as well. But 4.5 was when 2003 kind of came about. To XenApp 6.5. One thing is check your apps work on the new OS if you're going to consider looking at Azure Remote App, because if you're running the app on an older operating system, it may not work. So test. The number of users, the collection, whether you need a single, so we're talking about single location here. So single location, single collection can potentially look to move. The granular access assignment of users to publish applications, you need to consider that as well. But that'll be coming down on the roadmap. The last one looks at, so those familiar with Citrix, XenApp didn't have a version in 7. They called it Zen Desktop 7, App Edition. So they got the branding wrong. So they bought XenApp back in 7.5. But as a geographically dispersed farm, and this uses the new FMA architecture, geographically dispersed farm with NetScaler GSLB, I'd consider putting Citrix actually on Azure then, as that case. You get a like-for-like move, but you're moving your infrastructure into the cloud. So these are just some of the considerations. There's a lot more questions that can be asked and considerations as well. So in summary, really, want you to take away kind of three things. Look at your deployment architecture. Do you want an all-in-the-cloud deployment scenario? You typically want to look at domain joined, so it's a hybrid collection. So your images, the custom images that you create. Lock down your environment, GPOs. Printing, consider your printing requirements. Talk to your users. The ones that complain the most. How you'd go about architecting your profiles as well. And when to consider XenApp as an option. If you're using XenApp today and looking to move to Azure Remote App, look at some of those limitations that Azure Remote App give you today, whether it can be overcome, or whether it requires maybe looking at a solution where putting XenApp in the Azure is maybe the best case forward. So I've got this slide really so you can go out there and test. So call to action, really, you can actually take a screenshot of that and try it yourself. You know, as a user, log on with your Microsoft account or even set up as an admin. So set up that hybrid collection, download those GPOs from that SkyDrive, OneDrive site and deploy it. It's not so difficult. So, thank you. I'd refer you back to Eric's earlier sessions. Eric's over there as well if you want to talk to him. Wednesday, Thursday, he ran a session on fundamentals and advanced. It goes into a bit more detail on Azure Remote App deployment and so on. So look at those on Channel 9. And that's my email if you want to keep in touch. Lastly, do your evals, of course, and lastly, some additional links. So you'll all get this deck later on, and you can check those. But check the blog. The blog changes a lot. A lot of new features come into there. Just recently, some new PowerShell commands came into that as well. So it's changing all the time. It's less than a year old, I think. So it's come a long way since it got released from preview. Okay, any questions? I'll be at the expo speakers area for a little while, so if you want to come find me there, you're welcome to. But I think they need to prepare for the next session.
Thank you.
Thank you.